the OTB Podcast Network.
Hello there, you're very welcome along. So it's a Champions League evening. We have Atalanta, little old Atalanta, the fairy tale story of the Champions League anyway, but especially under these circumstances. They are against PSG. We will talk to Rory Smith of the New York Times. He's written a brilliant piece about Bergamo. Obviously, Atalanta very much of Bergamo. The COVID capital of the world at one point, 17,000 deaths in the region. And he's talked about how they're re-emerging just now. And Atalanta tonight means a hell of a lot to a lot of people in the area. So Rory Smith of the New York Times coming your way 7:30. We'll have Vera Powell with us, Irish women's team head coach, chat to her about her career. She wasn't allowed to play for a team growing up. She had to watch in the sidelines, her brothers were playing. But she went on to make 89 appearances for the Dutch. She helped Rinus Michels with his coaching manual. And she'll tell us why girls should absolutely be playing with boys at underage level. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Most importantly, though, it is a Champions League evening, which means he's back. We have Double D, Damien Delaney, in studio, in person. Good evening.
How are you, Joe? Good to be back.
This has been a while.
It has been. We're a bit far away from each other. I'm not feeling the connection just yet.
Let's keep it that way, my friend. Let's keep it that way. You want to go another metre that way? There's no issue with me. So, welcome back. I mean, it has been the most surreal couple of months. We have been working our backsides off here to keep a show going, you know, no sport, 3 hours a night, daily morning show, weekend show. You have the tan of a man who has done sweet and all.
The weather's been nice. Yeah, the weather was nice in the lockdown, and just sitting out the back garden was pretty much my day how it went. And then it was pretty poor July, and we're back out on the golf course now in August. So, but I'm absolutely delighted to be back. To be honest, absolutely delighted.
You were saying outside you didn't know what day it was most of the time.
Yeah, I think everyone was like that though.
Sometimes
you look to like
retired footballers were like that.
Sometimes you look to football, the structure of your week, don't you? Like Saturdays and Champions League on a Tuesday. You kind of work, once you worked your life around that, but you know, there were landmarks in the week, right? Mm. With everything off, you know, some days you'd be arguing with your missus about whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday, and you weren't 100% sure who was right, you'd have checked the phone.
It's like Christmas.
Exactly.
Yeah. What have you made of football since it's come back then? Have you enjoyed it? I've been watching with crowd on, crowd off.
Crowd off is my preferred choice. Just simply because of the delay, you know, when something good happens, there's always that split second before the cheering comes in, and that was kind of annoying. So I thought sound off is the best. Look, I've enjoyed it. It's not been brilliant. It's not been amazing. It's not been what we all want or we all probably need, to be honest, at the moment. But look, it's the safest possible way, and a product is better than no product. So look, we're just pleased to see the League of Ireland back up and running as well, because you know those teams needed a little boost, and obviously Champions League come back tonight is brilliant.
Yeah, it sure is. We'll get to that very shortly. Richard McCormack here as ever. Hello.
Gents, how are you?
We are very well. We're going to kick off the news round, as ever it is, with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. And Cyrus Christie, extraordinary interview this morning on OTBAM, Rich.
Yeah, lots in it. The Republic of Ireland defender Cyrus Christie opened up about being racially abused by an Irish fan after a training session in Dublin. Christie has represented his country 24 times and recently helped Fulham win promotion back to the Premier League. The 27-year-old went public before over racist abuse he received online, and Christie told this morning's OTBAM the claims of online racist abuse weren't taken seriously by the Gardaí.
The police, whatever it might be, they don't do enough. They don't even, they come to a certain point where, because it's more high profile, they look like they want to do something, but it's more to benefit themselves. So they don't look bad, but then behind the scenes, they're really and truly, how much are they actually doing? That is the question. And I mean, there's so many incidents that happen, and the toughest thing is proving it. Even if it did happen as well, how do they prove it? And I understand that it's tough because it's so-and-so's word, but if that's face-to-face, but then when you're seeing it on Twitter and different social media platforms, it's there for everyone to see. And when you're, you know, making petitions for people to get lynched, I mean, you know, that's a threat on your life. And, you know, like I said, the guard really didn't understand where I was coming from. They didn't do anything about it. You know, I don't know what they expected. And even when I sat down and spoke to them, they didn't understand when I was explaining different stories about growing up. And they said, oh, yeah, well, I just don't believe someone in Ireland could be racist. And, I mean, you're going to get racial people everywhere. I mean, I'm not trying to say the whole country was racist, but you have everything there that you need, the evidence, what people were saying. I believed it was enough for them to do something, but you know, I come away from actually, we ended up ending the meeting early because I just knew that they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, that was all surrounding a tweet or two after the Denmark game. And we got onto the Gardaí at the time to check about their understanding of the situation, and they said there was a full investigation. The first suspect was a juvenile at the time of the offence. He was deemed suitable for inclusion in the Gardaí Youth Diversion Scheme, which has taken place. That did happen. And then they said there was a second culprit, mid-20s, and a direction of no prosecution was received from the DPP. What Cyrus Christie was talking about this morning then was a separate incident where he was training in Dublin with the Irish team, and there were some kids there at the session. And we'll play some of this later on. We'll play it close to the football show and give you a good sense of it, or you can get the full interview on the app or wherever you get your OTBAM content. It's in all our social channels. But at the end of training, they were going over to sign some bits and bobs for the kid, and one of the kids said something. It was racist. I think the fellow players were fairly horrified, and they stopped signing some stuff. And the worst part was Christie said there was a teacher with the group, and she heard it and didn't do much about it. There was no real pointing out to the kid, who's clearly modelling his behaviour on what he's hearing elsewhere, and this is learned behaviour as much as anything. She didn't seem to decide that was a good moment to jump in and point out how serious this was, how wrong this was. And Christie revealed all that this morning. Very, very grim, clearly, and we'll play the full a good chunk of the interview later on. It's well worth listening to. He's incredibly articulate and even-handed on the whole thing, although you can imagine how upset he is. And I mean, I'm sure you've been watching from your couch over the last couple of months, Damien, like everybody. George Floyd's death has prompted this global discussion. Cyrus Christie's been trying to have it for a little while. Come up again today.
It's staggering when you listen to what he's saying there. You know, what you're saying, that a young boy would say that and a teacher would stand by, and the Gardaí didn't seem to take much interest in it either. I can't quite get my head around that, how anybody could listen to a child say something like that, and whether the child fully understood what he was saying, or whether it was, I'm not defending the kid, but you know, he might not understand the
seriousness,
the gravity of what he's saying. He obviously doesn't understand the history, or I'm hoping, or assuming he doesn't understand the history of racial inequality throughout the world. So it may be something he heard and he was repeating, something he read online and he was repeating, and he thought it was funny, and maybe it was supposed to be a joke and it wasn't. So, but how somebody didn't like quickly take him off and sit him down and say, hey, listen, you do understand what you're saying right now. It does beg your belief, if I'm being honest, that actually took place. I can't envisage any scenario where any adult would hear something like that and then not do anything.
It would suggest we've far more of a problem here than we realise, you know, because I mean, Cyrus Christie has a status as a professional footballer, as an Irish footballer in his jersey at training. And if he's on the receiving end of that, then we can only imagine what's going on left, right and centre all over the place.
I think that's
the other point.
I think that's, without doubt, Ireland is no exception. I think every country has an issue with racism, with inequality. And unfortunately, there's some people that are just so stuck in the ways that they'll never come out of it. And unfortunately, we put the way for a generation of people like that to die off before it truly starts to see a marked improvement. But the kids coming through is, you know, some people are beyond, you know, change. They're so set in their ways, we're raised a certain way, they believe a certain, and you'll never change it. That is what it is. And sometimes those people have to just leave us. But the kids coming through, if we can get through to half of them or all of them, any amount of them, you limit then the amount that'll get passed on to the next generation, and hopefully in time it'll be eradicated completely. But education for children is huge, absolutely huge. And I know from being in the UK, there's part of the Kick It Out campaigns, and there's lots of anti-racist campaigns in and around the Premier League, and a lot of education programs as well. I'm not certain what's in Ireland, so I wouldn't be confident enough to comment on it about the amount of education that's going in to anti-racism, to equality. You almost said anti-inequality to inequality. So look, education for the young kids is key, and that teacher clearly missed an opportunity.
Richie, news on the Masters?
Yep, the organisers of the Masters have confirmed that no patrons will be allowed at the Augusta National this year. The major was due to take place in April, but was suspended until November because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Augusta chairman Fred Ridley said today that the potential risks of allowing fans to attend are too significant. So that's going to be all three majors that do go ahead will be happening without fans.
Okay. We've got football this evening then, Champions League.
Yeah, Paris Saint-Germain hoping to reach the Champions League semi-finals for the first time in 25 years. The French champions take on this season's surprise package, Atalanta, in the first of this week's quarter-finals, and kickoff in Lisbon is at 8 o'clock.
It seems Mbappe, who has an ankle injury, is going to be just fine. PSG are in okay-ish form, but I mean, they've hardly played a game in however many months because the French league went early. Interestingly, there's never been a treble, domestic treble, in French football until the last couple of years. Now PSG have done it 4 times in 6 years, and nobody cares. It's so hollow. It's just so empty. Atalanta are kind of the story this evening in many respects. 17,000 people dead in the Bergamo region. You think back to the haze of when? March, February, and...
When you and me were sitting here talking about the rugby with the Italians coming over and stuff.
Yeah. The period around then, following that, the following couple of weeks, one of the images we all probably remember, the army tanks taking away bodies. That's Bergamo. That's what we're talking about here. This is Atalanta. And we'll talk to Rory Smith later on. He wrote a great piece because even the Valencia game, when they played it at the San Siro, and it was one of the great nights for Atalanta, they were 4-0 winners. The sense in the area, like the chief doctor at the hospital in Bergamo has described that game on February 19th as a biological bomb, you know, so it's linked in many respects to the football as well. But they're coming out of it. Rory Smith's written a great piece. We'll talk to him about it. I think PSG, money, everything that's wrong with the game versus Atalanta coming out of disaster. I mean, I don't want to double guess the neutral here, but I think we have our team for tonight, don't we?
Absolutely. Just for a feel-good story, from the COVID point of view and from the nouveau riche of Europe of PSG and the underdog coming through, it's an unbelievable opportunity for Atalanta. I think that, you know, people always complain about PSG not being able to come out of the French league and then run at top speed in the Champions League. That was... Well, as I said, they've got to 3 months off now. Yeah. And no amount of training, no amount of statistics, no amount of anything can change what they're going to go into tonight. You know, if they can get through tonight with 90 minutes under their belt and with the short span and kind of other people might be in a similar-ish boat, you know, it's going to be an interesting Champions League finish. We could get a surprise winner in an Atalanta or a Lyon. Yeah. It's more than possible. I'd love to see something like that happen. But with a new format, the single legs that are being played, it sets up for a great tie. But I just think PSG will potentially struggle tonight.
Interesting, yeah. Well, PSG have never got past the semi-final stage. Never got past the quarterfinal stage. So they've had a run of 3 last 16 years, and before that, 4 quarterfinal years. So Tuchel, you suspect, you know, he knows if he doesn't get this done, he's in big trouble as well. One-off game favours the underdog. That's the point here. Two-legged affair. You know, the quality outfit will find a way. So Atalanta in with a big chance this evening. Rory Smith coming up very shortly from the New York Times. He's spoken to loads of people in Bergamo. It's lots of brilliant insights about the last couple of months from Atalanta. Where are we going next, Rich?
Here at home, Shamrock Rovers' defence of the FAI Cup will begin at home to Cork City. Cork earned their second round place with a last gasp extra time win over Longford Town last night. That goal coming in the first minute of added time of extra time. Dundalk must make the trip to First Division Cove Ramblers. Bowes will be at home to Cabinteely, while Derry City were drawn away to Drogheda. The other ties will see UCD play Sligo, Bray play Finn Harps, Athlone take on Wexford, and Galway will be up against Shelburne. Meanwhile, the FAI have lifted the ban on training in Kildare, Offaly and Laois. All activity in the Midlands counties was ceased on Friday in line with government regulations. While games are still banned, training can resume on a non-contact basis in groups of 15 or less.
Rich, what's the story with GAA on that front? Is training allowed?
Pitches are allowed to open. Similarly, they had a meeting of the COVID-19 advisory group, where are we now, Wednesday, on Monday, and they advised that pitches would be allowed to open up, but again, they're limiting their training sessions to non-contact. They're also limiting those groups to being of 15 or less. So it is pretty much exactly along the same lines between the FAI and the GAA and the other Gaelic Games bodies as regards what they're doing. They just have to, in those three counties, keep things at the bare minimum for the time being.
Okay. Interesting story from the world of GAA. It's a hell of a suspension.
Yeah. Killoo Emmett Ogue say they'll be appealing a 48-week suspension over the failure to pay a €750 fine. The fine was down to the club not contacting the Longford County Board to say they wouldn't be fulfilling a fixture. St. Colum killed St. Francis, togged out for January's under-16A football final but had no opponents. Killoo appealed to the fine, which needed to be paid by July 31st. But as the Leinster GAA Hearings Committee have been unable to sit since March, that appeal was never heard. Still, Longford's GAA Hearings Committee has decided to recommend a 48 8-week suspension, regardless.
It does seem heavy. Text in, has Damien finally seen the light and realised the La Liga or Solskjaer is at the wheel?
Absolutely not.
Still
not. The performance the other night didn't help either.
They just missed a lot of chances.
There's a lack of intensity with them.
32 degrees.
I still don't mind. I still think...
You haven't seen anything in the last couple of months post the signing of Fernandes that would suggest Solskjaer is getting to grips with this in a big way.
Okay. He's done better than I thought he would do from Christmas onwards. He absolutely has, and Fernandes has...
So you're wrong. You're admitting that you're wrong.
No, because I said Manchester United won't be close to challenging for the title again.
Yeah.
My original point still stands. Manchester United haven't won any silverware as of yet. They're still in the UEFA Cup, obviously. But they went out of the FA Cup at the semi-final stage, only for Leicester's injury record. They sneaked into fourth place. When were Manchester United judged on finishing fourth and getting to an FA Cup semi-final? Jose Mourinho got sacked for winning trophies. The bar has been lowered considerably for Solskjaer than it was for any of the previous managers. And if you're saying it's a success, then good luck to you, man, because you spend your life battling for fourth. Manchester United is about winning trophies, competing at the back end of the Champions League, and waltzing to FA Cup and League Cup and Community Shields. That's what Manchester United is about. They are no closer to doing that when you look at the other two who are so far ahead of them. The argument can be made that, you know, he stopped the rot and they're now kind of turned the ship
right
around
direction,
moving
yeah.
in the right direction. I take that point on board, but Manchester United aren't like funded in the same way that the other two are. Liverpool were going to be extremely well funded because they were starting from, you know, with a blank sheet of paper,
yeah.
and they've only spent a minimal amount of money. Manchester City are Manchester City, okay? If a Saudi takeover goes ahead with Newcastle, which doesn't look like it is now, then Man United are only going to fall further behind. So what I'm saying to you is the gap between Manchester United and the top two is as big as it was. They're less poor than what they were in January. But limping into fourth place because of an injury-ravaged Leicester squad. Again, another opportunity where Manchester United didn't turn up in an FA Cup semi-final. And the other night against SC Copenhagen, that desire that you see when you see Liverpool in full flight, the intensity that they play with, the relentless nature of what they do, if it's a training session on a Monday morning or a Champions League semi-final, it's the same. And Manchester City are a couple of signings away, which they've already addressed this year, with the two signings that they've made, and there'll probably be one more come in. Liverpool are going to strengthen. It looks like Thiago Alcantara is going to come in into an already perfectly harmonised squad. Manchester United need to move out a few players still, and I doubt, or it remains to be seen, whether they have the money to bring in the required, you know, Jadon Sanchos of this world, which would improve them.
Yeah, well, Dortmund are looking for over 100 million there.
Right.
I think United are saying that is a bit steep for Sancho. Would appear to be a bit steep,
yeah.
I would say as well. But I guess the point is, post the signing of Fernandes, in comparison with maybe however many months ago, it looked like Solskjaer was flailing badly, like the thing was falling down around him. So there is, you know, signs of progress.
He can only
make progress. Like, he's never going to bridge the gap
on
City and Liverpool in a year. No one would bridge the gap with that United squad on Liverpool and City in a year.
Okay,
what manager would?
It's the inconsistent performances. At least Arteta's won an FA Cup in his first year.
If Solskjaer had won an FA Cup, you would say to me, who cares about an FA Cup?
I'm absolutely not.
You
right,
would.
Absolutely
Nothing
not.
Sure.
No way. I would
What's
say,
an FA Cup?
I
no
would
one cares
say,
about an FA Cup.
Wow, they've won a tournament. They've shown up in a big game and they've actually got it done. I still, you know, they probably could go on and win the UEFA Cup this year.
Would that change your mind?
If they went and won the UEFA Cup this year, I absolutely would think, okay, they're further along. And
can we come into 2012 and stop calling it the UEFA Cup?
We don't have a Cup Winners' Cup.
Europa.
Europa League.
Means a lot to you, that tournament.
That's as much as the FA Cup.
Oh, my God. The Milk Cup? Any chance of a Milk Cup?
Yeah, jeez.
So if they won the Europa League, would you kind of look at it?
I would say, wow, they've moved along. But my point still stands. I still stand by my point, of Solskjaer doesn't strike me as the type of character that is going to grab this Manchester United team and drag him kicking and screaming into the same sphere as the other two. And ultimately, that's where Manchester United bar is set. It was set for Mourinho that high.
Sure.
It was set for Van Gaal that high. It's been set for everybody that high. All of a sudden, now Solskjaer's getting pats on the back. I just don't do it. Maybe the new PR team that they've brought in there, maybe, I don't know. But Solskjaer's a nice guy. I said at the top of the show, or the top of last year when I spoke to you, being a nice guy gets you nowhere, but it seems to be getting in pretty far. Wait till Man United start rolling out all the ex-pros now, one by one. Inter will be out, Palace will be out, all telling them how great he is, and Manchester United are fantastic. You know what's coming, you know, where they're all out sticking their nose into Jose.
Oh, I knew. You'll never quit, Jose, no matter what. I knew that that's ultimately what this whole thing was about. Sorry, listeners, I put a short circuit of that and said it's just about Jose. Richie, any Milk Cup, UEFA Cup updates you want to bring us or no?
Nothing yet, no. Ireland women's head coach Adam Griggs has named a 36-person squad for the remaining Six Nations games. Matches at home to Italy and away to France will be played on the last two weekends in October. Uncapped Connacht centre Shannon Toohey has been included, as have Ulster's Niamh Jones and Leinster's Katie O'Dwyer. Anthony McGill ended the first session of his World Snooker Championship semi-final with a 6-2 lead over Kyron Wilson. They will resume in the morning. Five-time champion Ronnie O'Sullivan is up against the three-time champion Mark Selby in the second of those semi-finals. Play got underway at the Crucible at 7 o'clock this evening in the first session of their semi-final. And as he waits for the score to load, I can tell you that O'Sullivan has taken the first frame of that match, but it is a long L slog. The first 17 is going to progress to the weekend's final. Meanwhile, Eric Donovan says he's ready to go to the well in his bet with Selva Barrett. The Kildare veteran has a chance to win the vacant IBF Intercontinental Super Featherweight title. Donovan was a late replacement to face Barrett as part of Matchroom's Fight Camp series on Friday night, but the 35-year-old says he's ready.
Selva Barrett is a formidable opponent. I respect him. He's a class act. And I've said this before, I'm a fan of Selva Barrett's, and I would have sat at home watching him in previous bouts, not knowing I'd ever have a chance to fight him. And whoever was in my company, I'd be like, you know, this guy's good. Have a look at this guy. Good boxing IQ, good ability, everything. But you know what? I'm good too. And I believe in myself. And you're right, I haven't been tested in my professional career. But that's due to a number of factors. You know, the team I had, very limited resources, the budget, the funding behind me, everything, you know, was very bottom of the ladder stuff, you know, like really, really bottom of the bottom, starting out grafting, trying to serve my apprenticeship. And I believe now I've graduated, and on Friday night I'm going out onto the big stage against a proper opponent in a proper fight, and it's going to be a cracker.
We had him on the show about 10 days ago or so now, and he was his usual eloquent, charming, brilliant self. And they've discovered him at the UK audience a little bit over the last couple of days. Eddie Hearn seems to have fallen hard for him. You know, he's interviewed him a few times. Every time he's like, this guy's amazing. Where has he been all my life? And the way Donovan even admits himself, it is, he's over there to be beaten. He's the B side of this fight. They want to launch Barrett as the Manchester, you know, the latest Manchester boxing star. But, you know, plenty of people, I heard Tony Bellew making the point, have strongly argued that Donovan is a lot of risk for not all that much reward for Barrett. Like, from a Barrett point of view, a risky choice. Yeah. And, you know, you really wish him well, because at 35, this is, like, the big chance for Donovan. He says himself, he looks at his amateur career, life wasn't so, you know, straightforward, and he has a lot of regrets. And this is almost to help him find a bit of peace as much as anything. So the stakes are really high for Donovan. It's going to be on Sky on Friday.
I look forward to seeing that, because you know, it's like a Rocky story type thing, isn't it? It was down and out, or maybe not given the chances he felt he should have had. So I'll be rooting for him, definitely.
Yeah, I think everybody else will be tuned in and watching that one. And Rich, I'd say if you're picking through the audio to bring us it for the news round, you'll have seen the reaction he's getting. Eddie Hearn, amongst others, like I said to Damien, almost going, "Jeez, this guy's incredibly, incredibly articulate and interesting."
He's very likable. That's what comes across most. A lot of boxers find them very hard to articulate themselves, very hard to put their story across in terms, I guess, that people will warm to. But like you said there, Hearn's like looking at Donovan here is thinking that, like, where was this guy 5-6 years ago? Yeah. I could have really done with him as part of my promotions, because this guy on his own could have sold fights. Like, I'm personally slightly perturbed at how much he is a voice twin of the great boxing coach Mick Dowling, but that's another story for another day. But he's such a good talker, such a genuine individual, but most importantly for Selva Barrett, a very, very dangerous opponent on Friday night.
Last couple of stories, Rich.
Yeah, Celtic's Boley Bolongoli has been issued with a fixed penalty notice by police for breaching coronavirus regulations. He failed to quarantine on his return from a surprise trip to Spain and then played in the Scottish Premiership match at Kilmarnock on Sunday. The next two matches involving Celtic have been postponed, with First Minister Nicola Sturgeon warning that the incident is a yellow card for football. On a similar note, Barcelona defender Jean-Claire Tobido has confirmed that he's tested positive for COVID-19. The 20-year-old defender is currently asymptomatic and quarantining at home in Barcelona. He's had no contact, importantly, with the Barca squad currently preparing for Friday's Champions League quarterfinal with Bayern Munich.
And finally then, if Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. is your thing.
You will have to wait. Mike Tyson's comeback fight has been delayed until the 28th of November. The 54-year-old will face the former four-weight world champion and everyone's favourite cockfighting enthusiast Roy Jones Jr. in an exhibition bout in Los Angeles. The fight was scheduled to take place in September, but will now be on Thanksgiving weekend in the hope that fans might be able to attend. God love them.
I mean, just when you thought this year couldn't get any stranger, Damien, you've got Mike Tyson fighting Roy Jones Jr. on Thanksgiving.
No, but it's an exhibition, like in a tube, not going there trying to relive past glories.
Nothing sure.
That's what their entire promotion is about, by the way, Damien. He's put this forward. He's like, come on and relive your past glories.
You're but like, they have no, to say that. To die. Like, I know, that's what I'm saying. They have to say that to sell it, because if they sell it as like a waltz or whatever, then no one's going to buy it. But I just hope that the two of them nod and a wink once the tickets are sold.
I mean, Jones Jr.'s had a bit of longevity. Tyson is going to be hands on his hips after about a minute of this. Like,
That's what I'm saying. There's a serious danger of one of them getting hurt here.
And it's
no headgear either. Yeah,
no headgear. I think they're making the gloves a bit bigger,
heavier,
aren't they?
Bigger, yeah, bigger and heavier. Yeah.
Kind of sparring type but gloves, like, but still.
Regardless, this whole promotion that Tyson's coming out with, it's not just for this fight. He's inviting other sports people to get on board with this as well, to have basically a second run in the sun. It's ludicrous, and I can't see it lasting all
I
that
hope
long.
That's just
fair.
PR. I really do, you know.
It's not. This is the actual thing about it. This is like the 100% it's been. He's saying, come back and relive your past glories, whether you're an ex-football player, ex-boxer, ex-soccer player, ex-gymnast, whatever it is. This is your second time in the zone.
Champion circuit, you know?
I couldn't think of that worse. Yeah.
Say that now. Wait until Tyson's ahead of you, dangling Damien. The money in front
I think
of
I added it at Waterford.
Yeah, exactly. It did not go well.
Yeah, relive your past glories. Oh, shit.
53106, text number, at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie, as ever, thank you.
Mind yourself, gents.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.